This is BirdieCast. A podcast about making light of life on tour. We're your hosts, professional golfers Maya Schechter and Leslie Klutz.
Welcome back to BirdieCast. I'm Maya.
This is Leslie.
And this week we have a very special guest with us, Tracy Hansen, who played for San Jose State, and you won 11 individual titles there, and as well as the NCAA team championship title. You won the USGA Public Links. You were low am at the U.S. Women's Open. You were a member of the U.S. Team in the Curtis Cup. And then you went on to play 15 consecutive seasons on the LPGA and retired in 2019. So, obviously, a lot of golf achievements, which I know, you have a great website that very much gives, I feel like, a broad picture of your story, and really helpful in kind of learning where you came from. But I guess, as I'm reeling off these achievements, that was one of the things that you felt like in your journey your identity was tied to your achievements, which now that I'm rattling them off, it feels like maybe that's not how I should introduce you. But so I guess to start off with, as growing up, you started playing golf to become closer to your dad, and you felt like the achievements was kind of how you sought approval in a sense.
Yeah, well, first let me say it's great to be with you too, and hanging out with the Symetra Tour players here in 2019. Just one correction, I retired in 2009.
Oh, sorry.
2019.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I just extended your
exactly.
Career. Sorry about that.
Yeah. So just so your viewers know, when I started playing golf because I wanted to do things with my dad, I was kind of the boy that he never had, and so I wanted his adoration and his acceptance, and I started to realize I could do that through sport. And so when I played my first tournament at age 10, I won a trophy and saw the delight in his eyes, and I was hooked. And so then started really a journey of using performance to find acceptance and love from other people.
Yeah, do you feel like, I almost feel like that's a common way that kids use sports. I mean, I know I started playing golf mostly because that was the way I got to spend time with my dad too. And I know, parents are obviously really proud of achievements. Is that something that you work with a lot in your mentoring and coaching? Is that sort of breaking away from achievement as a way to seek approval then?
I think every kid who's in sport is going to struggle with performance acceptance. And depending on how the parent parents that child through those experiences is really can make or break whether it's filled with just the striving for excellence and the pursuit of what's enjoyable about sport versus the expectations and the ups and downs with feeling like your identity is based on whether you succeed or if you fail. And so it's a very fine line, and it's really hard for parents who don't understand what's really happening inside of their children, that they just want to please their parents. And it can go, one word can shift it for a child. And so as I mentor players and athletes, I want to encourage them to pursue excellence. Like, you have a gift, you have a talent for golfers, you have a talent out here to play golf. And it's not the full sum of who you are.
Right. So then, I guess, it seems like one of the major ways that you shift that approval from another human being to more seeking, I don't know how to phrase it, seeking approval, not from God, but sort of that you are always loved. Would you say that's one of the ways that you has helped you deal with that sort of approval?
Yeah, I think being able to separate that what we do is not who we are. And I come from a Christian faith perspective, and so my my identity is to be focused on in my relationship with Jesus. Now, that doesn't mean that it's easy and that every day I really feel that. It's a struggle, even within my faith journey. And as I grow and mature, this is a journey. And I think everybody's on a journey that it's a discovery of we are to just be who we are. We're created very uniquely. And what we do, what we perform, is just kind of like the cherry on top. Like, but if I never performed any of those things that you described at the beginning of the podcast, am I still loved? Am I still wanted? Do I still belong? Because we're all created with these desires of longing, connection, love, being accepted for who we are, like our different personalities. And that just, in the world of sports, that gets stuffed and does not get the time and the recognition that it needs. And even for children, that, you know, it's really hard for parents to invest the time and energy into those characteristics.
Yeah, for sure. Do you feel like it was tough then shifting from golf, where it was a very clear sort of you play well and you're succeeding versus, I mean, I wouldn't know, but in other careers, there's not as clear of a line of what's perceived as success.
Right.
And redefining that after golf, was that a challenge, do you think?
I think it was, yes and no for me. So I think for a lot of athletes, it is, regardless of the sport, what do you do after your sport is done?
Right.
And golf is one that has a very small group of people that can play a long time. Other team sports, you know, they just the physicality of it forces them to end their careers fairly young. And so then what? Like, when you put all of your identity into who you are as an athlete, there is a, like, almost like a devastating cliff at the other side that, like, a lot of athletes fall and don't know what to do and derail. For me, I was getting to a point of personal breakdown. Like, I was working really hard, not seeing results. My body was beaten up. Played my whole career with a bad back. Emotionally, I was tired. Mentally, I was fatigued. And then I had this other piece of my story that I had not talked about for 20 years that was starting to just kind of eat away at my soul. And so when I left the tour, it was about a year and a half of wrestling through all of that before I decided, like, I'm done. And when I decided...
While you were still playing?
While I was still playing, yeah. And during my whole career, I did other things. I always had other interests. So I took a writing class. I did a computer class. You know, so I did things that kind of kept my brain involved.
Yeah,
it's kind of why we do this podcast,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's what I love about it. And so I knew that there was other things that out there that I could do and that I was interested in. And when I left the tour, I knew I needed time to rest and recover. And so I dabbled in things, but really what happened for me is when I separated from my place of performance, which was golf, I realized that emotionally and mentally I was not okay. Mm-hmm. And that I needed to get some personal care about that story that I was hiding from my high school years, which was a sexual abuse story. And as I started getting help with that story and starting to name truth, then my heart, my life, my interest really opened up. And I could start wrestling with that, oh, okay, I don't have to use performance as my drug of choice to make my world okay.
Yeah. Huh. I know as, like, when I daydream about what life could be after golf, it's hard because you've been playing for, you know, almost 2 decades, and it's like everything you seem to be doing was towards one goal, and it's like if you take that goal away, like, where you just feel like you're just running around with no sort of, like, you don't know what the next goal is going to be, which
right.
is, that can be definitely intimidating.
Yeah.
Or even
yeah.
just like, well, what a waste of those past years then. Almost.
Yeah. Right.
That's how I sometimes feel.
Yeah. You've invested all this time
right.
into
and
something.
Then just thinking about doing something else and kind of giving up. Yeah. that feels more like a failure than, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, because your goal is the LPGA Tour.
Right.
And to play at the highest level in the world. And it's a great, it's an amazing goal and a dream to chase, and not everybody's going to get there. And if you never, if any player out here never makes it to the LPGA Tour, it doesn't mean that they're less than of a person.
Right.
And I think focusing on like the process of that, like what have you learned? There are great qualities for that professional golfers have to learn in order to get to even the level that you're at here at the Symetra Tour. Self-discipline, self-motivation, perseverance, endurance, physical endurance. You're your own brand marketer. You have to raise money or find sponsors on your own. You're your own travel agent. All these skills that you're developing as you're pursuing your goal, whether you make it to the end or not, are great characteristics for whether you go into the business world, you become a teacher, maybe you go back to school and get a different degree. I mean, I think that's what's missed, is that you guys are all developing skills that really a lot of other people in other industries don't develop.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I guess it's not just the golf skills that we're, that
yeah.
we're working on. Yeah.
And it is hard to be a professional golfer. You have to be very selfish.
Yeah.
You have to be selfish in your mindset. You have to be selfish with your time. It comes at a great cost to your family relationships, to friendships, to romantic relationships. And at some point, there's more to life than, you know, balancing that, like, is it still worth the cost that you're giving up? And I think for athletes, golfers, to know that it's okay to start to think about those different things.
Yeah.
Even in the midst of playing and maybe making some preparations. Because even the girls on the LPGA Tour, they're not playing as long of careers as even the generations when I played.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that because of competition, you think?
I think, one, it's harder to stay out there longer.
Right.
There's more money available, so if you do have some good years, you can make more money in fewer years than when I played and the girls older than me. And with all the pressures and the impact on your body physically, some gals that are getting married and having babies that don't want to raise their kids on the road, you know, they're just making plans to play a certain amount of years or try to play a certain amount of years and go on to something else.
Yeah. How did you find your path after golf then? I mean, I guess you did a lot of soul searching, and then from there, did you have an idea of what you wanted to be doing?
I think I thought that I would leave golf and do something that was more like just put me behind a computer screen. Like, I didn't want to talk to people.
Get a 9-to-5.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't.
Paycheck every week.
Yeah, I didn't want to do, I didn't want to be like, I wasn't an extrovert. And so I didn't want to be out in the public eye. I wanted to be behind the scenes about something. And so I think the path that I'm on now found me, because I was willing to get help. And I needed help emotionally and mentally to really start to understand my story and the impact of my trauma story. And then birthed out of that is the desire to help other athletes.
Yeah.
Golfers on the Symetra Tour, but athletes in general who have experienced trauma stories. And trauma can be anything from an abuse situation to what you're talking about, like, what do you do? I've got an injury, I can't play anymore, now what? That's a trauma. Maybe you've had loss in your family through death or illness, or parents divorced as a child and you didn't know how to cope with that. So trauma is a very broad category, and so my desire is to help athletes talk about those stories.
Now that you're doing a lot of mentoring and coaching, looking back, did you have a mentor or somebody like that for you on tour?
I wouldn't say that I had somebody specifically on tour. I mean, when I played, we had a good group of ladies that were Christians and part of the Christian Fellowship, and those were kind of the people I hung out. I mean, I played with Betsy King and Barb Mucha and Barb Whitehead and Jenny Lidback and Wendy Ward and Jackie Gallagher. I mean, these are really fun, stable women. That had characteristics that I wanted to emulate and learn from. It wasn't as individualistic as it is even today. Like, we had more camaraderie and spent more time together.
Oh, really?
apart from the tour, I had a couple of really good friends that helped me stay somewhat sane through
golfers
the process.
Or non-golfers?
One golfer, one non-golfer, but my other close friend was an athlete and a teacher, and so she understood the mindset of an athlete. It wasn't really until after I left the tour that I had some women that really pursued me that were non-golfers and just cared about my heart. So some different experiences with mentors, and a lot of time I felt like I was on my own trying to figure it out. I lost both my parents fairly young. My mom young, and then my dad just right after I retired. So I had a really good swing instructor growing up who always told me, like, golf is only a means to something bigger. And I didn't know that at the time, like, how important that would be until after I left the tour.
Right.
That golf, and when I left the tour, I hated golf. I didn't want anything to do with golf. Right. And so until I started to kind of reconcile my story, now golf has become a place where I can use my platform, my credibility, my experience to help other golfers. But really, it's not about what you shoot at the end of the day. It's about who you are as a person.
Yeah. But, like, that's definitely easier said than done.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's a journey for sure.
Yeah. I know, so at the bottom of your website, you have Tracy's interests, one of which was chocolate chip cookies, which looked like a great recipe, so I'll have to try that one. And then you also had a link to a site, NeuroCore, and I called them and I was put on hold, and so I figured I would just ask you about it.
Okay.
I don't know, is that something, I mean, I guess tell the listeners about it and then how that plays into what you do. It seemed really interesting.
Yeah, so I met, well, first let's talk about the cookies. I mean, that's really the most important,
it was
right?
The most important part.
I'm very excited. Chocolate chip cookie-aholic, and I'm looking for the world's best recipe.
So that one's the best you found.
Well,
so
that's
far.
That is a good one.
Okay.
There
okay.
is a
Do
more...
Do you use Belgium chocolate? I think that might
no,
be...
No, I think I need to I try think, yeah. Belgium's chocolate.
I'll bring some back.
Yeah. I mean, it's the I guess, quality of the
that's
ingredient.
That's the quality
exactly.
Yeah. That's right.
And it's the way you mix the ingredients. Oh. It makes a difference, too.
Okay.
So, things to
so
study.
So this is something you're really on a journey.
I'm serious about this.
Okay.
So, neuroscience. So, I met a doctor named Dr. Tim Royer back in 2008, and he tested my brain, he tested my breathing, and I'm like, I'm thinking about retiring, why am I meeting this guy, I don't want to do this, but my swing instructor is like, you got to meet this guy. So, what his testing does is test the brain waves to tell whether your brain's moving too slow or too fast, which... for when you're talking about peak performance for athletes, makes a difference, because when we talk about being in the zone and like you string along 5 birdies in a row and you're like, wow, how did that happen? I just was like in automatic pilot. That's the zone. So peak performance is about getting in the zone as more of a normal state rather than an abnormal state. And so that's what this neuroscience, this neurofeedback testing can do.
Hmm.
Dr. Royer is, he started and developed NeuroCore, and then he started a second company called NeuroProPeak, which is more for the VIPs and athletes. And now he's on his own under Royer Neuroscience.
Hmm.
So if you're looking for information, I would either go to Royer Neuroscience or NeuroPeak Pro, would be the two companies. So I think it's really kind of the next frontier of peak performance. DeChambeau on the men's tour is working with them. Dr. Royer's worked with numerous NBA stars, NFL stars, other athletes, and even VIP like you know, executives in the corporate world. Oh.
So it's like a training device, right, that gives you feedback?
Yeah, it's feedback. So biofeedback you can control. You can control your breathing. You can learn to breathe slower, more rhythmic. But neurofeedback is testing the electrical currents in your brain. Mm-hmm. And the only way you can change those neural pathways is to give it some kind of stimulus. Huh. We can't think it differently.
Yeah.
It's not a cognitive thing. And so that's what neurofeedback is.
Do you do that daily?
I have the use of the machine. I don't do it like I should do it.
isn't it? Because it looked like there was a home version, but you can also go on site.
If you're up in Michigan, they have clinics, but there's actually a mobile unit, which would be more conducive for athletes that you could travel with. And yeah, you just hook up these electrical leads to your head, and then you watch a movie on the screen, and your brain on that unconscious autonomic nervous system level does the work.
Huh. Yeah. Interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you find that that's, I mean, have you used it with any of the athletes that you've worked with? And
we've
helped?
Used it. Actually, there's a couple players here that have been tested on the Smetra Tour. I've done some work with the Orlando Magic guys, and what it does is it balances out the nervous system, and the goal is being to have more flexibility in your nervous system, not getting stuck in that fright or flight anxiety state, which most of us as golfers especially are stuck in this anxiety state, right? So when you go out and you start your round and then you have a bogey, you get a little anxious. Well, now your nervous system is tightening down. And you need to be able to have some flexibility to relax back down when you after a crisis, so that you can come back to your peak performance. It takes time. It's not a quick fix.
No, so. Right. Have you ever experimented with like meditation and that sort of thing?
So meditation is great, and breathing exercises is great, and it will have a small impact on your nervous system. It will impact the nervous system, but to get the greatest impact on the nervous system is to do both that meditation and breathing and the neurofeedback on top of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I wonder if it affects your sleep.
Absolutely. So your over-anxious nervous system will impact your sleep cycles, and you won't get as much sleep or as deep, you know, those deep REM cycles.
Yeah.
So if you can calm your nervous system down, both from the neurological side and the breathing heart rate side, the research has proven that your sleep gets better.
Yeah.
And sleep is directly impacts memory, long-term memory, as you get older in age. So they're finding a lot of, you know, for Alzheimer's and dementia, that there's a lot of correlation between the lack of sleep that we have come to normalize that it's okay, which it's not.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. We could talk for hours.
Yeah,
on this.
I know. Yeah. No, that's true. I guess going back to the golf side of things, I mean, you played 15 consecutive seasons. Is there something that you felt was helpful in that success? Or, I mean, for our listeners who want to play on tour or are playing on tour, just a little nugget to help us out.
Yeah, I think probably if I had to say it in one realm is that learning how to rest and take time away from the game. So what I have seen, even in the 15 years that I played, we went first 5-6 years, we would play, practice, and then go fish in the afternoon. We had time to go to dinner, to go to a movie. And the longer I was out there, the less time was available for those things to happen. And so all of a sudden now you're practicing all day, you're tired, you're trying to get a workout in, you got to go to a party, you got to do a sponsor thing. And it just revs. So my biggest thing is like learn how to take pockets of rest and to not only rest your body, but to rest your mind. Because, you know, as golfers, we think our golf swing 24/7.
Yep.
But also in the big scheme of the year is to take time away from the game. And so I grew up in northern Idaho where it snowed. So I only played golf 5 or 6 months out of the year growing up. I played basketball, I skied. When I got to college, I'd go home for 5 or 6 weeks during the holidays, and I didn't pick up a club Well, I continued that even in my professional career. So once the season was done, like early November, I'd put the clubs away until after the holidays, and I'd start preparing for the season again. Wow. So I took like 5 or 6 weeks off.
Yeah.
Now that may not be good for everybody, but you need to take time away from the game. Yeah. One, to rest your body, to rest your mind, and to develop those other interests so that you can come back with freshness rather than always being tired.
Yeah, that makes sense. We talked to Christy McPherson last year, and yep. She had a very similar kind of key to success. She made sure she took time off and found other things to do outside of the golf course.
Yeah.
So I guess,
and not feel bad about it.
And not feel bad about it, right? Yeah. Knowing that it's a key, that it really is a key to success, and that it'll help you play better. It's not
I think it will help. It helps keep perspective.
Yeah.
It helps to know that you're more than just your score at the end of the day.
I feel like that's a huge word in the golf, like golf world, perspective. I mean, at the end of the day, it's an opportunity to play a game you love, to walk around outside and to be outside, not behind a desk, and to meet people and travel the country. But it's hard to it's hard to have that perspective and not think about the 76 you shot or the 4 under you just shot. Like it's so easy to get caught up in just the golf shots. And even when you're playing, having that perspective that you just made a bogey, but you're gonna play hundreds of more golf holes, and it's just.
Yeah, and especially out here on the Symetra Tour, when you know you're fighting for the LPGA, but there's not a lot of money. The weeks are long. You don't have a lot of support. You know, you don't have caddies all the time. You're driving most of the time. You know, so you guys are expending a lot of energy just being here.
Yeah, I remember my first season. I was so exhausted just when I get to the golf course.
Yeah.
I remember that. I was just happy when I made it on time.
Yeah, so and then you got to get to the tournament days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think giving yourself not to be so rigid, you know, mm-hmm. like have some flexibility. So if you don't play all 18 holes or, you know, spacing out your practice a little bit finding some other things to engage your mind and interest. It's really important.
Yeah. Do you have any other questions?
No, I think that was really interesting.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming up.
Any
You're
other
welcome.
Last tidbits you'd like to share?
No, I'm just, you know, I'm thankful that I can come and be a part of the Symetra Tour and be available. There's still a lot of players that don't really know why I'm here, but I'm just here to mentor, to provide support. I'm not at every tournament, but, you know, I'm available by phone, email, and in person when I am here.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, we're really, really glad you're out here, and I know a lot of players don't quite know what you do, but maybe this will help, and we can certainly help spread the word. So
your email inbox will be flooded.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I love that you guys are doing this, and I hope it continues to be a fun thing that you can navigate.
Yeah. I think that's the key.
Yes,
sure.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to Birdie Cast.